Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, that was way too exciting for my liking.
Toward the end of it, for sure. Yeah.
That is not, you know, look, we talked about if the Lakers were going to lose. I said it in yesterday's show, or the last time you and I talked, if the Lakers are going to lose to Houston, or if Houston's going to go on a giant run, it's going to be because of the things that the Lakers are doing. It's not going to be because of any kind of crazy adjustment that the Rockets are going to make, or at least a sustainable adjustment, right? They made that run with PJ Tucker sitting on the bench, but I don't think they're going to go, like, they aren't going to not play PJ Tucker moving forward. Right.
Right. Right.
So yeah, that's where we find ourselves. Even still, the Lakers just thoroughly dominated that performance, you know, from start to almost finish, 110 to 100. Once again, holding Houston to under its averages this season. As you pointed out on Twitter, this is the third game in a row that Houston has shot at least 40% from three-point range and lost. Those are the only three such games on the season. But aside from the far too exciting bullcrap that we saw at the end of the game, I felt like this basically lived up to the conversation you and I had when we talked a couple days ago.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was, you know, aside from, yeah, that last stretch of the game, the Lakers dominated this game. They have been able to take the Rockets completely out of what they want to do. And it's funny how much this series has followed the progression of the last one, in that we dropped game one, won game two, and then by game three in the second half especially, you saw the Lakers kind of take their spirit. And then game four was a blowout. Now, we stopped playing with like 6 or 7 minutes left, and almost, you know, the final score is not going to be indicative of that. But the Lakers' speed, and this was the first game where JaVale sat for the whole game, Dwight sat the whole game, started Markieff Morris, got a little THT in there. That was awesome. But the Lakers' speed and athleticism on the perimeter have limited the Rockets to just 33 three-point attempts in this game, 30 attempts the game before. 30 was the lowest, and 33 is very close as well to their lower attempts. We've been able to take the Rockets out of what they want to do, and they just don't have an answer. They don't have a plan B. This is what they do, and if they're not allowed to do it, they're not going to – they can't adjust, right? And we really saw that. We've seen that as the series has progressed, especially.
Yeah. The comparison I would make is to Milwaukee, where it's been frustrating watching them not adjust because they seem to have the pieces to be able to adjust, right?
Now, do you think so? Like, I don't think they have the – yeah?
I do. Well, I do. In now, I don't think they can adjust, you know, from what they did all regular season and then just try to do something new in a postseason, in a series. Like, I think that's a big ask of any team. But if they really, like, tried over the course of the season to play Giannis at the five and try to switch everything and be able to try that,
Bucks. I agree with you on the Bucks. I just don't know what the Rockets can do.
No, that's what I mean. So, like, the Bucks were frustrating because I thought they could adjust.
Oh, I see what you said.
The Rockets cannot. Like, there's personnel-wise, there just isn't really anything they can do.
Yeah.
Unless you really believe in Tyson Chandler.
but even then, it's not just that they're small. Like, if you're small, you better, like, they're small, but they don't dominate with their ball handling. They don't have excessive ball handling because it's two guys that are really responsible for that. Eric Gordon can handle it a bit, Austin Rivers, right? But they don't have some abundance of guys who can really handle the ball. So that's something that if you're small, you should have guys. Like, there are too many guys in that team, and just the whole approach and construction of them, that their job is to do like one or two things. And in the playoffs, like, when you're playing one team, the novelty factor wears off more and more. We were confused by Houston in game one. We're not confused by them at all anymore. We've solved that problem, and they don't have the skill sets to be able to progress to the, oh, well, you're taking this away in ways that other teams cannot, right? You're taking this away, so this is plan B, plan C, because just the players are too one-dimensional in a lot of respects on the offensive end to counter what it is we're doing.
What it kind of reminds me of is, you ever watch Modern Day play?
Mm-hmm.
The high school down there? And how, yep, like, they, for a team, for a high school that is as storied as it is, kind of surprising that they haven't really produced very many, like, legitimate pros. Like, Stanley Johnson is, like, he's in the NBA right now, but he hasn't quite lived up to his billing. And, like, what I kind of attribute it to is that their coach, I think it's Gary McKnight, I think it is. He's very, you know, you have to do this, and our point guard does this, and our shooting guard does this, and our small forward does this, and our power forward does this, and our center does this. We're very regimented, and there's no flexibility on that. And what that leads to, you know, it's fine in high school basketball, because they get so much talent that it doesn't really matter, you know. But I kind of feel like they're doing a disservice to those players moving forward with that approach. And fortunately, like, you have AAU, and you spend enough time away from McKnight that you can still kind of work on your game and hopefully be able to develop after high school. But here with the Rockets, it's the same kind of thing where, all right, either Harden is going to create this play, or Westbrook is going to create this play. And if Austin Rivers is going to be asked to create, it's going to be with 7 seconds left on the shot clock. And by the way, when Austin Rivers is going to be trying to create, don't expect James Harden to be on at all involved in the play, because he's going to be standing up there at half court. That, to me,
that's part of, like, why, that's part of why,
oh,
versatility.
My God.
Like, you can't go from the highest scoring player in the NBA in one circumstance to being not just mostly
useless,
unable, but mostly uninterested. Right.
Yeah.
It's not even just like, it's like, try, you know, like, go try to work off of the ball. That's part of the, oh, they're trapping you, and they're taking away, right? Like, their whole approach is like, oh, okay, they've taken this away. Well, I guess we can't do nothing about it, right? Like, that's part of basketball, is being able to adapt and attack in different ways. Versatility is so underrated. And we've seen that with this Lakers team, where this Lakers team can be different versions of itself. Like, they're not going out of their personality in this series to play AD at the five all the time. They are a little bit with having Morris at the five, right? Mm-hmm. But that speaks to the, like, Morris has been a good small ball center. Like, he's not a great player, but he's been a solid dude well before
he's
this time.
Like, 5 minutes.
The Lakers. Right. And in a series like this, you know, that malleability, that ability to show different looks, is different than how we approached beating Portland. It's different than how we'll approach, you know, knock on wood, most likely the Clippers, right? That's a different series. It's different in its nature, but that's how you win a title, is being able to beat different types of teams. And mm-hmm. I would even argue that the Lakers are a bad matchup for the Rockets, in that we've got all of these big, fast, and strong athletes in a way that, like, maybe Golden State was also built on skill. And so Golden State couldn't overwhelm them with their athleticism in previous years. But this Lakers team is really doing that with just their size, speed, and strength in a way that Houston's having a hard time. Like, once we kind of figured out the problem, that there's not much they can do about it.
Yep. Let's take a quick second here. And when we come back, we're going to keep talking about what's left of this series, whether we think the Lakers close this out, whether this gets extended for some dumb reason, and maybe spend a little bit of time looking ahead potentially to the Clippers, if that is the direction that this goes in. Today's show is brought to you in part by DoorDash. DoorDash has been a vital part of all of our lives as we try to get through whatever our lives have kind of become. And I legitimately can say honestly that we would not have made it through, at least the Irwin family would not have made it through all of this without some help. And I know there are a bunch of restaurants out there who would say the same thing, that they would not have made it through all of this without some help in the form of these major delivery services. And DoorDash is the best one that you're going to find. They have all of these partnerships, 300,000 of them, across not just our country, but throughout Puerto Rico and Australia. So basically, almost no matter where you're ordering food, they're going to be able to get it to you. And so for the Rockets, for example, as they travel back to Houston, they'll be able to pick up their DoorDash waiting for them as soon as they get home. If you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code LOCKEDONNBA, you'll save $5 off your first delivery and not pay any delivery fees on it. Again, if you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code LOCKEDONNBA, you'll save $5 off that first delivery and pay no delivery fees on it. One more time, that first delivery, after you download the DoorDash app, if you enter the promo code LOCKEDONNBA, you'll save $5 and not pay any delivery fees. Just really quickly, because it legitimately pisses me off watching James Harden play. And it's not just the fouling stuff, which bothers me in and of itself, but checking out as much as he checks out on offense, when you are considered this like extraordinary, almost not before seen offensive player, spending so much time not being involved. Like, Warriors fans and Warriors Twitter especially likes to mock the amount of time that Steph Curry spends running off of screens in the half court and doing all those things, and how, you know, Kerr over relies on that sometimes, especially when Kevin Durant was there, when you could just run Kevin Durant and Steph Curry pick and rolls, and that's just unbeatable, right? Or Steph Curry and Draymond Green pick and rolls, and you have Draymond in the short roll, and the options that he has at his disposal, given that Kevin Durant is probably in the weak side corner and Klay is in the strong side corner. There's just nothing you can really do there. And yet they still ran Steph Curry off of all these screens, and they had him cutting, and they had him doing all of these different things. And I watched James Harden, and it's just like, it legitimately offends me when there's a comparison made to Kobe. It legitimately offends me where I say, you must have never seen Kobe Bryant play. Like, or if you watched Kobe, you only watched him when he had the ball and paid no attention to him any other times during the game. Because like, everybody likes to mock the game 7 performance where he shot 6 of 24 against the Celtics in that game 7. And that's the thing that people, you know, who want to disparage Kobe will point to, but they'll overlook the 16 rebounds that he grabbed and all the trips to the free throw line that he made while he was just trying to find some way to impact the game when his shot wasn't going or when he didn't have the ball. And I watched James Harden, and I find myself, and look, this helps the Lakers. So it doesn't, at the end of the day, fuck him. He can do whatever he wants, but like on a just simply love of the game standpoint, it irritates me to watch him take himself out of these games. It makes no sense whatsoever. Somebody who is as great a shooter as he is, go fucking stand in the corner. What are you doing standing at the half court line? Go at least find a spot where you could like kind of stretch the defense. And I'm ranting at this point, and I'm ranting about something that has really helped the Lakers, but it's just on a purely basketball level, this is not the way that the sport was meant to be played.
Well, and there are fundamental flaws to making it effective, right? Is that there's a danger anytime you find a statistic or analytic of some sort that if you're simply basing, you can't reverse engineer, right? Or you can, there's limitations to it in that, like, look, what the Rockets are going for makes sense, right? The best shots in the game are shots around the rim, shots behind the three-point line, and the best shot of all is the free throw. Mm-hmm. And they are built to get those shots as often as possible, and they want to maximize that. There are a couple of inherent problems with going too far in that direction. I always say that the mid-range game is important because the defense is going to win some possessions, and you're not going to get those shots that you want. And you have to be able to extract some degree of value. The Rockets will go and go and go throughout a 24-second shot clock, driving and kicking and trying to get that open three or that open layup around the rim. And if they don't, it's a very difficult shot that's being taken from 25 feet away while contested with a hand in their face. So those possessions in which the defense does their job, they have difficulty scoring on. Secondly, from a spatial perspective, the usable areas of the court are so small. If all we have to defend is 3 feet from the hoop and beyond the three-point line, and then making our rotations in between, right?
Yeah.
Like, if that's all we have to defend, if there's no triple threat, no high post, none of that, there's no versatility to what you do, we can do that because you're kind of playing defense against yourself in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
You're just asking our big and fast athletes to cover less space than you're asking than we have to defend against anybody else. It was always going to go this way when that's what you're doing against bigger, stronger, faster athletes, right? It's one thing when it's JaVale and Dwight, like there's a tipping point where those guys aren't fast enough, but we have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, right? And then it's Markieff Morris and Kyle Kuzma. These guys are not spectacular athletes, but when you've got elite athleticism and then like, oh, hey, those guys are pretty big on top of that and good athletes at least, especially in Kuz's case, right? That you're asking us, all we have to do is cover 3 feet around the rim and then behind the 3-point line, and you're going to defend yourself in the other areas. It's just like, you can get a lot of wins and you can kind of, to me, it's like kind of gaming the system a little bit in that, but when a team is focused on you, the novelty starts to wear off and then it really starts to expose just, I think, the fundamental flaws in the approach.
Yeah. I used to play poker, and one of my favorite things to do was to play against guys who only played the math aspect of the poker, right?
Right.
Because if you were playing against that kind of player and you would be going up, you know, they would make their way into a hand. I always kind of knew, all right, that guy probably has, you know, X kind of hand and better. And if you get a certain kind of flop, you know, if it's a junk flop, I never have to worry about that guy catching something stupid because he's in a hand that mathematically you should be in, right? And every so often I would mix in, you know, just hop in to a flop, see a flop and try to stumble into catching something that I have no business catching, but only because the guys that I'm going or the people I'm playing against don't anticipate that because of their own closed-minded way of playing the game. And I watched Houston and they're that now, granted, they're very smart. The players who played that way, understanding how to do that math. Like, part of my thing was I didn't really know how to do the math of poker and like do like on the fly, do all the statistics that you need to be able to do said math. But even still, they're dumbing themselves down by limiting the ways that they can possibly beat me in those hands. And I watch Houston. And it's just like one of the toughest things to defend. If I go out to the 3-point line and I run a player off of the 3-point line and that player just takes a dribble in and takes a mid-range jumper, there's very little the defense can do about that. There's almost nothing the defense can do about that. If it's a good mid-range jump shooter and they're basically shooting an open jumper there. But there is time, however, for a defense to recover if that player is only interested in getting to the rim. In part because we know that the entire point, we know they aren't going to take that jumper. So I can just sprint to the rim and try to meet them there and be able to get some kind of a contest up. So it's just, like you said, I think it's a good way of putting it. You can't game the system because eventually the system is going to jump right up and a team that's talented enough is going to catch you.
Especially when that team gets to focus on just you.
Yeah,
and they're going to win a lot of games. I'm sure other teams are going to adopt their approach, but it's got a ceiling on it. There are things to be learned from them, right? They're going to be influential, but this series is really showing that basketball is more than an equation, and that there are and maybe basketball. I suppose everything is an equation. Basketball is a much more complex equation than all of the factors that get put into this approach. And when you go to the finished product and say we're going to achieve the finished product without understanding how the finished product is achieved along the way, the steps along the way to like that they couldn't see that our size, I mean, maybe they could, but there's nothing they could do about it, right?
Yeah,
but like our size and athleticism was always going to be, and our speed on the perimeter was always going to chase them off the 3-point line. The 30 attempts, lowest of the since they traded Capella from 3-point range 2 games ago, 33 3-point attempts. They've shot 40% the last 3 games, and they ain't won a single one of those. They were 16-0 on games where they shot 40%.
And they're only a couple runs away from being blown out of 2 of them.
That's right. They were +15 from the free throw line too. They were plus 15 from three. They were plus 15 from the 3-point line. The Rockets were plus 30 in those two stats, and we whooped them, mm-hmm. right? Because they started to crumble in other places, and they're not able to get those 50 to 60 3-point shot attempts against us the way they are against everybody else. And that was always going to be the case.
Yep. Let's take a quick second here. We got to give credit to Frank Vogel for his tweak in the starting lineup. I didn't anticipate that. Because the Lakers had been winning. So I think we got to give some credit there. And then if there's time, we'll look ahead and, see what things might look like should the Clippers and Lakers both take care of their business over the weekend. Today's show is also brought to you in part by Built Bar. We've talked about being able to adjust to the situation. And while I would, obviously get a full meal as often as I possibly can, sometimes and usually via DoorDash, given how much time I spend with Avery, there are some times that I only have time to grab a Built Bar, maybe two, depending on how starving I am, scarf those down really quick, and then try to play catch up with Avery. And Built Bar makes it so that it doesn't even feel like you're skipping a meal. In some cases, like, it has basically become my breakfast, and it has become a very good breakfast for me. So head on over to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and save $10 off not just your first order, but your second, your third, your fourth, and so on and so forth. And then share the link with your friends. Tell them, hey, go to Built Bar, try out any one of their fantastic tasting bars, and enter the promo code LOCKEDON to save $10 on it. However many times you hop onto the site and you buy those bars. One more time, that is BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON to save $10 off your first, your second, your third, your fourth. However many orders you put in, enter that promo code LOCKEDON and enjoy Built Bars. All right, so one of the things that have kind of driven me not insane, but they've it certainly bothered me for some stretches, and it's not a Vogel thing either, by the way. Like, this is a head coach thing in all of basically professional sports and organized sports, is when they're winning, they don't tend to shift things up too much, right? You don't tend to, and it's definitely not as drastic a shift as not playing your starting center, right? JaVale gets a DNP CD in last night's game. And this is where I just got to give Vogel some props for understanding, hey, this is a move that we think is going to give us the better chance at winning here. And he did it. And the Lakers looked, I would say, as good, if not better, than they have in the first 5 minutes of the game as they have all season.
Yeah, no, it was really complete effort, right? Our guards were really good today. Danny Green had a solid game.
Yeah.
This was probably best game in the playoffs. KCP shot well, right? It was something where everybody contributed. Rondo was solid. I don't think he was as good as he was mm-hmm. last two games, but he hit some big shots. He was rebounding like a madman, right? He had 10 boards in this game.
He had a huge offensive rebound when the Lakers were kind of free-falling in the fourth.
Reeling. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so just the complete nature of this win. And I thought in a lot of ways, like, Houston's spirit was lost the same way that Portland's was by game four. And we really saw that on the boards, right? Like I mentioned the math, the Rockets were plus 30 on the free throws and threes. Well, you get to make that up when you out rebound the other team, 52 to 26, that's when you double them up. Mm-hmm. 12 to 1 on the offensive boards. What that results in is we took 88 shots and they took 65. Mm-hmm. Now, some of that's made up for in free throws, but not most of it. And so when we get more possessions, and that was a result of everybody contributing in crashing the boards and really using, like, they started to crumble physically in this game. And that was a team effort in the defensive rotations. Yeah, the first part of this game, they really turned the screws and didn't really look back, even though they completely let the gas off the pedal as they crossed the finish line.
Yeah, I tweeted early on in the game that it looked like Houston was looking for an excuse to fold up shop. Like, it was just it felt like the kind of team was like, oh, hey, we made a couple shots. We're still kind of in it. And it's, if you're not really watching the game and you're only looking at the scoreboard as it's going along, you could kind of say, oh, well, they're still kind of in it. No.
I wanted a 30-point win all day today. I sensed it like that we had a shot. And I really think that we had a shot at it if we wanted it. But yeah, I totally sensed exactly what you're talking about.
I think we get it next game. I think we get it on, what is it, Saturday?
Hope so.
I think Saturday we get the big blowout win. Because, look, it's the same thing we talked about heading into this game. What is it that Houston can do, can feasibly do, right? You're not going to not play PJ Tucker because he wasn't in when you went on that run. You aren't going to bench Russell Westbrook, which, like, I'd be interested. If I were a Houston fan, I would be calling for Russell Westbrook to be benched. I just want to see what it looks like. Give me like a quarter without Russell Westbrook and see how you're up against the wall. You're not gonna win this series if you keep playing him. We know that for sure.
I mean, good luck. How many years are left on his contract? Good luck benching him in a playoff game. And I think there are ramifications for doing that going forward.
He only has one. I think he has maybe next year.
No, he's got way more than that, bro. There. I'm gonna look this up right now.
I know Chris Paul has a player option 2 years from now, but I'm pretty sure because I think that's why they paid. They had to give up picks to get Westbrook.
Nah, man. Westbrook this year, 38.5 million. Next year, 41.4. The year after that, 44.2. The year after that, player option for 47.1. And Harden is a right 38.1, 41.2, 44.3, 47.4. So they got, player option wise, they got $95 million committed to those two in the 2022-2023 season.
What are the chances that either of those players are on the team in 2022-23?
That's not for me to say. Right. That's not a good point. Not something I can, I all can, right.
I'll
discuss,
say it,
but
you don't have
but
to
they
agree.
Are committed. Yeah.
Hey, Pete left for a second. No chance in hell they are on the team in the 2022-2023 season. All right, let's look ahead really quickly. And, because the Lakers play Saturday night, Clippers play tomorrow night, both teams can close up, can finish up their series. I think both do because they will, especially if the Clippers win, then I think the Lakers will win because you have that. You don't want to let the Clippers rest while you have to play a meaningless game and risk injury there. So if that is how things go here, I think there's a chance Denver wins, though MPJ's statements don't really help that, the efforts there. But if that is how things go, the Lakers and Clippers face off at the beginning of next week, how do you feel any differently about that series now than you did at the beginning of the year, at the beginning of the postseason, at the beginning of the series? Every step along the way, I felt a little bit differently about it. How about you?
Yeah, we're going to get more into this most likely, right, with both teams looking likely to advance. Mm-hmm. The opening night of the season, we, in our rotation, we had Quinn Cook, Troy Daniels, and Jared Dudley all played rotation minutes in that game. Alex Crusoe was a DNP CD. Kuz was out, as was Paul George. Uh-huh. I believe Rondo was out for that game as well. I'm almost certain he was, which is why Cook was in the rotation, right? Mm-hmm. Christmas, we freaking blew that game. And that was something that even, AD said that we gave that game away. And then we won the last two. All of that is to say that with the Clippers acquiring Morris, us acquiring his identical twin, them getting Jackson, these two teams are very different than they were at the beginning of the season. I feel a lot better now than I did at the beginning of the season about our chances versus the Clippers. Mm-hmm. But make no mistake, that is a phenomenal team. I think they're the best or second best team in the NBA right now. I think we're the best team in the NBA, but they are not only stylistically different, but they are a tier or two above what we've played the teams we've played so far. Mm-hmm. So we will have to bring our best, and it will have to be a different kind of best than what this series is asking for. That said, I like our chances, but we have to take them very seriously.
I think it's a coin flip. I've always kind of thought, I think at the beginning of the season, I think I might have, like, if they were to play 100 times, I'd like to go back and listen to the conversation we had with Justin.
Russo. Yeah. Yeah. So Justin said 51-49 Clippers. I said 60-40 Clippers at the time. The Lakers have gotten better over the course of the year. Their roster, they really improved their roster.
Yeah.
And you know, Caruso becoming a big part of the rotation, and just kind of this Lakers team has improved to the point where I think the Lakers, I think I'd say like 55-45 Lakers. So near coin flip, but slight favorite for the Lakers.
I think what I would agree, but Zubats's improvement makes me think it's a coin flip. Like if he's playable in that series, then that's a different team, you know, and what he's done to this point. No, and he's doing, you know, he's looked, you know, pretty good against Nikola Jokic, who is one of the best centers in the league. Played against, who they play against in the first series? That was Dallas, right? So Kristaps didn't play after game two, so it's kind of hard to say there. But he has kind of, he's really impressed me this postseason. Yep. And his ability, if the Clippers can get away with Zubat's minutes, then that's a different look. But even there, though, the Lakers have Dwight and JaVale to match up with those minutes too. It's just a fun series. I think we're going to see wildly incredibly different swings, I think, in that series.
Very possible, right? The one thing I will say with Zoo is that Jokic is the type of guy that is a good matchup for him, right? He's not particularly athletic. While he is a perimeter player, he's not – like they're built similarly physically. And so I think, like, our ability to go small, that's going to be a key to that series, right? Is can Zoo stay on the floor with AD at the five?
Yeah.
And, but Zoo, I always thought Zoo actually had decent minutes against AD. I know Doc has said that he doesn't love that matchup, but I'm curious to see if that's changed. But yeah, I agree with you that Zoo's ability to do what he's doing now against us is going to be just a huge key for them.
Yep. We'll see how that goes. Lakers got to get there. Clippers got to get there in the first place. So we'll see, you know, if they actually do.
Exactly.
But, you know, I still think that's how this plays out. But you never know, man. This is the Nuggets have already come back from 3-1 once. And you know, with injuries and hell, if the referees give the Rockets 33 free throws again. What was it? Yeah, 33 free throws. No, 39 free throws. The Rockets shot in last night's game. If they shoot that many free throws and that really affects the Lakers' rotation minutes and stuff like that, you know, we might be talking about a later longer series. But hopefully it doesn't get there. Hopefully you guys can ask your questions on Sunday in the form of 5-star reviews on iTunes about the matchup between the Lakers and Clippers. And if you can't leave that on iTunes, you can leave them to me at Anthony Irwin LA. At Locked On Lakers is where you can find the show on Twitter. And at the very least, you can shoot them over to LakersLockedOn@gmail.com. Have a great rest of your weekend. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you.